Corporal Littlebottom stood up and looked at him expectantly. She had been sitting next to a box, which cooed peacefully. "Something's up. Run down to, send a pigeon down to the yard," said Vimes.
"Yes, sir."
"All leave is cancelled as of now, and I want to see every officer, and I mean every officer, at the yard at, 6 o'clock.
"Right, sir. That might mean an extra pigeon, unless I can write small enough."
Littlebottom hurried off. Vimes glanced out of the window. There was always a certain amount of activity outside the palace, but today there was not so much a crowd as just rather more people than you normally saw, hanging around, as if they were waiting for something. Clatch. Everyone knows it. Old Detritus was right. You could hear the little pebbles bouncing. It's not just a few fishermen having a scrap. It's 100 years of, like two big men trying to fit into one small room, trying to be polite about it, and then one day one of them just has to stretch, and pretty soon they're both smashing the furniture. But it couldn't really happen, could it? From what he'd heard, the present serif was a competent man who was mostly concerned with pacifying the rowdy edges of his empire. And there were Clatchians living in Ankh-Morpork, for heaven's sake. There were Clatchians born in Ankh-Morpork. You saw some lad with a face that had got camels written all over it, and when he opened his mouth, it'd turn out he had an Ankhian accent, so thick you could float rocks. Oh, there's all the jokes about funny food and foreigners, but surely... not very funny jokes, come to think of it. When you hear the bang, there's no time to wonder how long the little fuse has been fizzing. There were raised voices when he went back into the rat's chamber. "Because, Lord Selachi," the patrician was saying, "these are not the old days. It is no longer considered nice to send a warship over there to, as you put it, show Johnny Foreigner the error of his ways. For one thing, we haven't had any warships since the Mary Jane sank 400 years ago, and times have changed. These days the whole world watches, and, my lord, you are no longer allowed to say, 'What are you looking at?' and black their eyes." He leaned back. "There's Chimeria, and Canley, and Ephib, and Tussaut, and Muntab these days too, and Omnia. Some of these are powerful nations, gentlemen. Many of them don't like Clatch's current expansionist outlook, but they don't like us much either."
"Why ever not?" said Lord Selachi.
"Well, because during our history, those we haven't occupied, we've tended to wage war on," said Lord Vetinari. "For some reason, the slaughter of thousands of people tends to stick in the memory."
"Oh, history," said Lord Selachi. "That's all in the past."
"A good place for history, agreed," said the patrician solemnly.
"I meant, why don't they like us now? Do we owe them money?"
"No. Mostly they owe us money, which is, of course, a far better reason for their dislike." "How about Stolat and Pseudopolis and the other cities?" said Lord Downey.
"They don't like us much either." "Why not? I mean to say, we do share a common heritage," said Lord Selachi.
"Yes, my lord, but that common heritage largely consists of having had wars with one another," said the patrician. "I can't see much support there, which is a little unfortunate because we do not, in fact, have an army. I am not, of course, a military man, but I believe that one of those is generally considered vital to the successful prosecution of a war." He looked along the table. "The fact is," he went on, "that Ankh-Morpork has been violently against a standing army. We all know why people don't trust an army," said Lord Downey. "A lot of armed men, standing around with nothing to do, they start to get ideas." Vimes saw the heads turn towards him. "My word," he said, with glassy brightness, "can this be a reference to old Stoneface Vimes, who led the city's militia in a revolt against the rule of a tyrannical monarch in an effort to bring some sort of freedom and justice to the place? I do believe it is. And was he commander of the watch at the time? Good heavens, yes, as a matter of fact, he was. Was he hanged and dismembered and buried in 5 graves?
And is he a distant ancestor of the current commander? My word, the coincidences just pile up, don't they? His voice went from manic cheerfulness to a growl.
Right. That's got that over with. Now, has anyone got any point they wish to make?
There was a general shifting of position and a group clearing of throats.
What about mercenaries? Said Bogis.
The problem with mercenaries, said the patrician, is that they need to be paid to start fighting. And unless you are very lucky, you end up paying them even more to stop.
Salacci thumped the table.
Very well then, by jingo, he snarled. Alone!
We could certainly do with one, said Lord Vetinari. We need the money. I was about to say that we cannot afford mercenaries.
How can this be? Said Lord Downey. Don't we pay our taxes?
Ah, I thought it might come to that, said Lord Vetinari.
He raised his hand, and on cue again his clerk placed a piece of paper in it.
Let me see now. Ah, yes. Guild of Assassins. Gross earnings in the last year, Ankh-Morpokian dollars, 13,207,048. Taxes paid in the last year, $47.22. And what on examination turned out to be a Hershebian half-dong, worth 1/8 of a penny.
That's all perfectly legal. The Guild of Accountants.
Ah, yes. Guild of Accountants. Gross earnings, Ankh-Morpokian dollars, 7,999,011. Taxes paid? Nil. But ah, yes, I see they applied for a rebate of Ankh-Morpokian dollars, 200,000.
And what we received, I may say, included a Hershebian half-dong, said Mr. Frostrip of the Guild of Accountants.
What goes around comes around, said Vetinari calmly.
He tossed the paper aside.
Taxation, gentlemen, is very much like dairy farming. The task is to extract the maximum amount of milk with the minimum amount of moo. And I'm afraid to say that these days all I get is moo.
Are you telling us that Ankh-Morpork is bankrupt? Said Downey.
Of course, while at the same time full of rich people. I trust they have been spending their good fortune on swords. And you have allowed this wholesale tax avoidance? Said Lord Salacci.
Oh, the taxes haven't been avoided, said Lord Vetinari, or even evaded. They just haven't been paid.
That is a disgusting state of affairs.
The patrician raised his eyebrows.
Commander Vimes?
Yes, sir.
Would you be so good as to assemble a squad of your most experienced men, liaise with the tax gatherers, and obtain the accumulated back taxes, please? My clerk here will give you a list of the prime defaulters.
Right, sir. And if they resist, sir? Said Vimes, smiling nastily.
Oh, how can they resist, Commander? This is the will of our civic leaders.
He took the paper his clerk proffered.
Let me see now. Top of the list?
Lord Salacci coughed hurriedly.
Far too late for that sort of nonsense now, he said.
Water under the bridge, said Lord Downey.
Dead and buried, said Mr. Slant.
I paid mine, said Vimes.
So let me recap, then, said Vetinari. I don't think anyone wants to see two grown nations scrapping over a piece of rock. We don't want to fight, but by jingo, if we do, we'll show those,
Lord Salacci began.
We have no ships. We have no men. We have no money, too, said Lord Vetinari. Of course, we have the art of diplomacy. It is amazing what you can do with the right words.
Unfortunately, the right words are more readily listened to if you also have a sharp stick, said Lord Downey.
Lord Salacci slapped the table.
We don't have to talk to these people. My lords, gentlemen, it's up to us to show them we won't be pushed around. We must reform the regiments.
Oh, private armies, said Vimes,
under the command of someone whose fitness for it lies in the fact that he can afford to pay for 1,000 funny hats.
Someone leaned forward halfway along the table. Up to that moment, Vimes had thought he was asleep. And when Lord Rust spoke, it was indeed in a sort of yawn.
"Whose fitness, Mr. Vimes, lies in 1,000 years of breeding for leadership," he said.
The Mister twisted in Vimes's chest. He knew he was a Mister, would always be a Mister, was probably a blueprint for Mistership. But he'd be damned if he wouldn't be Sir Samuel to someone who pronounced years as hears.
"Ah, good breeding," he said. "No, sorry, don't have any of that, if that's what you need to get your own men killed by sheer..." "Gentlemen, please," said the patrician. He shook his head. "Let's have no fighting, please. This is, after all, a council of war. As for reforming the regiments, well, this is, of course, your ancient right. The supplying of armed men in times of need is one of the duties of a gentleman. History is on your side. The precedents are clear enough. I can't go against them. I have to say I can't afford to."
"You're going to let them play soldiers?" said Vimes.
"Oh, Commander Vimes," said Mr. Burley, smiling. "As a military man yourself, you must..."
Sometimes people can attract attention by shouting. They might opt for thumping a table or even take a swing at someone else. But Vimes achieved the effect by freezing, by simply doing nothing at all. The chill radiated off him, lines in his face locked like a statue.
"I am not a military man."
And then Burley made the mistake of trying to grin disarmingly.
"Well, Commander, the helmet and armour and everything, it's really all the same in the end, isn't it?"
"No, it's not."
"Gentlemen,"
Lord Vetinari put his hands flat on the table, a sign that the meeting had ended, "I can only repeat that tomorrow I shall be discussing the matter with Prince Kufura."
"I've heard good reports of him," said Lord Rust. "Strict but fair. One can only admire what he's doing in some of those backward regions. A most..."
"No, sir, you are thinking of Prince Kadram," said Lord Vetinari. "Kufura is the younger brother. He is arriving here as his brother's special envoy."
"Him? That one? The man's a wastrel, a cheat, a liar. They say he takes bribes."
"Thank you for your diplomatic input, Lord Rust," said the patrician. "We must deal with facts as they are. There is always a way. Our nations have many interests in common, and of course it says a lot for the seriousness with which Kadram is treating this matter that he is sending his own brother to deal with it. It's a nod towards the international community." "A Clatchian bigwig is coming here," said Vimes.
"No one told me."
"Strange as it may seem, Sir Samuel, I am occasionally capable of governing this city for minutes at a time without seeking your advice and guidance. I mean, there's a lot of anti-Clatchian feeling around."
"A really greasy piece of work,"
Lord Rust whispered to Mr. Boggis, in that special aristocratic whisper that carries to the rafters.
"It's an insult to send him here."
"I am sure that you will see to it that the streets are safe to walk, Vimes," said the patrician sharply. "I know you pride yourself on that sort of thing. Officially, he's here because the wizards have invited him to their big award ceremony. An honorary doctorate, that sort of thing. And one of their lunches afterwards. I do like negotiating with people after the Faculty of Unseen University have entertained them to lunch. They tend not to move about much, and they'll agree to practically anything if they think there's a chance of a stomach powder and a small glass of water. And now, gentlemen, if you will excuse me." The lords and leaders departed in ones and twos, talking quietly as they walked out into the hall. The patrician shuffled his papers into order, running a thin finger along each edge of the pile, and then looked up.
"You appear to be casting a shadow, Commander."
"You're not really going to allow them to reform the regiments, are you?" said Vimes.
"There is absolutely no law against "'Against it, Vimes, and it will keep them occupied. "'Every official gentleman is entitled, in fact, I believe, used to be required, "'to raise men when the city required it. "'And, of course, any citizen has the right to bear arms. "'Bear that in mind, please.
"'Arms is one thing.
Holding weapons in them and playing soldiers is another. Vimes put his knuckles on the table and leant forward. You see, sir, he said, I can't help but think that over there in Clatch a bunch of idiots are doing the same thing. They're saying to the Serif, it's time to sort out those devils in Ankh-Morpork, Effendi. And when a lot of people are running around with weapons and talking daft stuff about war, accidents happen. Have you ever been in a pub when everyone goes armed? Oh, things are a little polite at first, I'll grant you, and then some twerp drinks out of the wrong mug or picks up someone else's change by mistake, and 5 minutes later, you're picking noses out of the beer nuts. The patrician looked down at Vimes's knuckles and stared fixedly until Vimes removed them. Vimes, you will be at the wizard's convivium tomorrow. I sent you a memo about it. I never... A vision of the piles of unread paperwork on Vimes's desk loomed treacherously in his mind. Ah, he said. The commander of the watch leads the procession in full dress uniform. It's an ancient custom. Me? Walk in front of everyone? Indeed. Very civic. As I'm sure you recall, it demonstrates the friendly alliance between the university and the civil government, which I may say seems to consist of their promising to do anything we ask, provided we promise not to ask them to do anything. Anyway, it is your duty. Tradition decrees it. And Lady Sybil has agreed to see to it that you are there with a crisp, bright, shining morning face. Vimes took a deep breath. You asked my wife? Certainly, she is very proud of you. She believes you are capable of great things, Vimes. She must be a great comfort to you.
Well, yes.
Excellent. Oh, just one other thing, Vimes. I do have the assassins and the thieves in agreement on this, but to cover all eventualities, I would consider it a favour if you could see to it that no one throws eggs or something at the prince. That sort of thing always upsets people. The two sides watched each other carefully. They were old enemies. They had tested strengths many a time, had tasted defeat and victory, had contested turf. But this time, it would go all the way. Knuckles whitened. Boots scraped impatiently. Captain Carrot bounced the ball once or twice. All right, lads, one more try, eh? And this time no horseplay. William, what are you eating? The artful nudger scowled. No one knew his name. Kids he'd grown up with didn't know his name. His mother, if he ever found out who she was, probably didn't know his name. But Carrot had found out somehow. If anyone else had called him William, they'd be looking for their ear, in their mouth.
Chewing gum, mister.
Have you brought enough for everybody?
No, mister.
Then put it away, there's a good chap. Now, let's...
Gavin, what's that up your sleeve?
The one known as Scumbag Gav didn't bother to argue.
It's a knife, Mr. Carrot.
And I bet you brought enough for everybody, eh?
That's right, mister.
Scumbag grinned. He was 10. Go on, put him on the heap with the others. Constable Shu looked over the wall in horror. There were about 50 youths in the wide alleyway. Average age in years, about 11. Average age in cynicism and malevolent evil, about 163. Although Ankh-Morpork football doesn't usually have goals in the normal sense, two had been nevertheless made at each end of the alley, using the time-honoured method of piling up things to mark where the posts would be. Two piles. One of knives, one of blunt instruments. In the middle of the boys, who were wearing the colours of some of the nastier street gangs, Captain Carrot was bouncing an inflated pig's bladder. Constable Shu wondered if he ought to go and get help, but the man seemed quite at ease. Captain, he ventured.
Oh, hello, Reg. We were just having a friendly game of football. This is Constable Shu, lads.
50 pairs of eyes said,
We'll remember your face, copper.
Reg edged around the wall, and the eyes noted the arrow, which had gone straight through his breastplate and protruded several inches from his back.
There's been a bit of trouble, sir, said Reg. I thought I'd better fetch you. It's a hostage situation.
I'll come right away. Okay, lads, sorry about this. Play amongst yourselves, will you? And I hope I'll see you all on Tuesday for the sing-song and sausage sizzle.
Yeah, mister, said the artful nudger.
And Corporal Angua will see if she can teach you the campfire howl.
Yeah, right,
said Scumbag. "But what do we do before we part?" said Carrot expectantly. The Bloods of the Scats and the Mohawks looked bashfully at one another. Usually they were nervous of nothing, it being a banishment matter to show fear in any circumstances. But when they'd variously drawn up the clan rules, no one had ever thought there'd be someone like Carrot. Glaring at one another with, "I'll kill you if you ever mention this," expressions, they all raised the index fingers of both hands to the level of their ears and chorused, "Wib, wib, wib." "Wob, wob, wob," Carrot replied heartily. "Okay, Reg, let's go."
"How'd you do that, Captain?" said Constable Shue as the watchman hurried off.
"Oh, you just raise both fingers like this," said Carrot. "But I'd be obliged if you don't tell anyone, because it's meant to be a secret signal."
"But they're thugs, Captain. Young killers, villains."
"Oh, they're a bit cheeky, but nice enough boys underneath, when you take the time to understand."
"I heard they never give anyone enough time to understand. Does Mr. Vimes know you're doing this?"
"He sort of knows, yes. I said I'd like to start a club for the street kids, and he said it was fine, provided I took them camping on the edge of some really sheer cliff, somewhere in a high wind. But he always says things like that, and I'm sure we wouldn't have him any other way. Now, where are these hostages?"
"It's at Vortin's again, Captain, but it's sort of worse than that."
Behind them, the Scats and the Mohawks looked at one another warily. Then they picked up their weapons and edged away with care. "It's not that we don't want to fight," their manner said. "It's just that we've got better things to do right now, and so we're going to go away and find out what they are."
Unusually for the docks, there was not a great deal of shouting and general conversation. People were too busy thinking about money. Sergeant Colon and Corporal Nobbs leaned against a stack of timber and watched a man very carefully painting the name Pride of Ankh-Morpork on the prow of a ship. At some point he'd realised that he'd left out the E, and they were idly looking forward to this modest entertainment.
"Have you ever been to sea, Sarge?" said Nobby.
Not me," said the sergeant. "Don't go flogging the oggin, lad."
"I don't," said Nobby. "I have never flogged any oggin. Never in my entire life have I flogged oggin." "Right. I've always been very clean in that respect."
"Except you don't know what flogging the oggin means, do you?"
"No, Sarge. It means going to sea. You can't bloody trust the sea. When I was a little lad, I had this book about this little kid. He turned into a mermaid sort of thing. And he lived at the bottom of the sea. The oggin." "Right. And it was all nice talking fishes and pink seashells and stuff. And then when I went on my holidays to Quirm, and I saw the sea, and I thought, here goes. And if our ma hadn't been quick on her feet, I don't know what would have happened. I mean, the kid in the book could breathe under the sea, so how was I to know? It's all bloody lies about the sea. It's all just yuck with lobsters in it." "My mum's uncle was a sailor," said Nobby. "But after the big plague, he got press-ganged. Bunch of farmers got him drunk. He woke up next morning tied to a plough."
They lounged some more.
"Looks like we're going to be in a fight, Sarge," said Nobby, as the painter very carefully started on the final K.
"Won't last long. Lot of cowards, the Clatchians," said Colon. "The moment they taste a bit of cold steel, they're legging it away over the sand."
Sergeant Colon had had a broad education. He'd been to the school of My Dad Always Said, the college of It Stands to Reason, and was now a postgraduate student at the University of What Some Bloke in the Pub Told Me.
"Shouldn't be any trouble to sort out, then," said Nobby.
"And of course they're not the same colour as what we are," said Colon.
"Well, as me, anyway," he added, in view of the various hues of Corporal Nobbs. There was probably no one alive who was the same colour as Corporal Nobbs.
"Constable Visit's pretty brown," said Nobby. "I've never seen him run away. If there's a chance of giving someone a religious pamphlet, old Washpot's after him like a terrier."
"Ah, but Omnians are more like us," said Colon. "Bit weird, but basically just the same as us underneath. No, the way you can tell a Clatchian is, you look and see if he uses a lot of words beginning with Al, right? Because that's a dead giveaway. They invented all the words starting with Al. That's how you can tell they're Clatchian. Like, alcohol, see?"
"They invented beer?"
"Yeah."
"Well, that's clever."
"I wouldn't call it clever," said Sergeant Colon, realising too late that he'd made a tactical error.
More luck, I'd say.
What else did they do?
Well, there's... Colon racked his brains. There's algebra. That's like sums with letters. For people whose brains aren't clever enough for numbers, see?
Is that a fact? Right,
said Colon. In fact, he went on a little more assertively now he could see a way ahead. I heard this wizard down the university say that the Clatchians invented nothing. That was their great contribution to maths, he said. I said, what? And he said, they came up with zero.
Don't sound that clever to me, said Nobby. Anyone could invent nothing.
I ain't invented anything.
My point exactly, said Colon. I told him it was people who invented numbers, like four and seven. Right, who were the geniuses? Nothing didn't need inventing. It was just there. They probably just found it.
It's having all that desert, said Nobby.
Right, good point, desert. Which, as everyone knows, is basically nothing. Nothing's a natural resource to them. It stands to reason. Whereas we're more civilized, see, and we got a lot more stuff around to count, so we invented numbers. It's like, well, they say the Clatchians invented astronomy.
Owtronomy, said Nobby helpfully.
No, Nobby. I reckon they discovered S's by then. Probably nicked them off us. Anyway, they were bound to invent astronomy, because there's bugger all else for them to look at but the sky. Anyone can look at the stars and give them names. It's going a bit to call it inventing, in any case. We don't go around saying we invented something just because we had a quick deco at it.
I heard what they got a lot of odd gods, said Nobby.
Yeah, and mad priests, said Colon. Foaming at the mouth, half of them. Believe all kinds of loony things.
They watched the painter in silence for a moment. Colon was dreading the question that came.
So, how exactly are they different from ours, then? Said Nobby. I mean, some of our priests are,
I hope you ain't being unpatriotic, said Colon severely.
Nah, of course not. I was just asking. I can see where they'd be a lot worse than ours, being foreign and everything.
And, of course, they're all mad for fighting, said Colon. Vicious buggers with all those curvy swords of theirs.
You mean like they viciously attack you while cowardly running away after tasting cold steel?
Said Nobby, who sometimes had a treacherously good memory for detail.
You can't trust them, like I said. And they burp hugely after meals.
Well, so do you, Sarge.
Yes, but I don't pretend it's polite, Nobby.
Well, it's certainly a good job there's you around to explain things, Sarge, said Nobby. It's amazing the stuff you know.
I surprise myself sometimes, said Colon modestly.
The painter of the ship leaned back to admire his work. They heard him give a heartfelt little groan, and both of them nodded in satisfaction. Hostage negotiations were always tricky, Carrot had learned. It paid not to rush things. Let the other man talk when he was ready. So he was whiling away the time, sitting behind the upturned cart they were using as a shield from the occasional random arrow, and writing his letter home. The exercise was carried out with much frowning, sucking of the pencil, and what Commander Vimes called a ballistic approach to spelling and punctuation. Dear Mum and Dade, I hope this letter finds you in good health, as I am also. Thank you for the big parcel of dwarf bread you sent me. I have shared it with the other dwarfs on the watch, and they say it is better even than Ironcrafts to bread with to edge. And you can't beat the taste of a home-forged loaf. So well done, Mum. Things are going well with the wolf pack that I have told you about, but Commander Vimes is not happy. I told him they were good lads at heart, and it would help them to learn the ways of nature and the wilderness. And he said, ha, they know them already, that is the trouble. But he gave me $5 to buy a football, which proves he cares deep down. We have more new feces in the watch, which is just as well with this trouble with Clatch. It is all looking very grave. I feel it is the clam before the storm, and no mistake. I must break off now, because some robbers have broke into Vortin's diamond warehouse and have taken Corporal Angua hostage.
I fear there may be terrible bloodshed, so I remain your loving son, Carrot Iron Founderson, Captain. P.S. I will write again tomorrow. Carrot folded the letter carefully and slipped it under his breast.